No, I know that there is a process to be followed.
Right.
Because I have not looked at your specific case, I do not know where the statutory corporation was considered to have gone wrong. And therefore, you perhaps should share that with us, because it is all part and parcel of trying to better understand the laws governing, you know, employment and the firing of people and the retrenchment of people. So on what grounds did you win the case?
Because they did not renew my contract. And any statutory corporation, after you do a year on a contractual basis and then re-employed without taking holiday, without giving holiday or take out the time to say, well, look, I will send you home for 30 days or 40 and rehire you. As long as it is continuous service by law, you should renew that man contract. You follow what I'm saying?
Okay.
Good.
Understood.
But the point that I'm saying is that the chairman, the director may want to do it, but he is governed by the chairman who is managing the organization or the statutory corporation.
And you said the chairman as distinct from the board.
Yes, the chairman of the board. And I always tell you that the chairman is the mouthpiece of the minister, unless that chairman has the guts to stand up for what he thinks is right or wrong. And in this case, this was a simple case where the chairman at the time, who knew or should have known the laws, labor laws, erred and going out.
Well,
connected.
I just want to say to you that it is just an example of why the Employment Rights Tribunal has been considered to be important by people. That, you know, if you feel that your case has not been handled in a proper and just manner, then you do exactly what you've done. Now, I don't know to what extent it has changed your life, because it's been quite a while. How many years you had to wait for this judgment?
7 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
All right.
But what I am saying, I'm getting, as I said, I sat on boards, and when certain issues come up to me, anybody would tell you, I would not support anything that I believe is wrong. Anytime a chairman is versed or should be a principal in teaching law to the workers,
I want to see, I would prefer to get the details of this case myself, because as I said to you, I haven't followed this particular matter. And in addition to that, I've also learned, with all due respect to other colleagues in the media, that sometimes what is reported is not all that there is to the decision. So I would prefer to see the decision so that I could be better informed about the basis upon which you won the case. But suffice it to say that you feel like a winner today. Indeed, you are so triumphant that you sound like a lamb today.
Not that I sound like a lamb, because what I am concerned about is my fellow workers who do not have the knowledge or the wherewithal to do what I did. But as you know, I told you, in my life, I was always in the forefront, and you always used to tell me, man, you talk about the poor man all the time. I did this continuously. It is a victory for me, yes, but it is a victory for the working class.
Well,
because, what? Give me a little bit.
Working class?
How does this represent
a victory for the workers, for you?
Because if they have followed their law, there are things that they will follow and understand. Well, let me put it this way. You hear me came on this ear, and I questioned the nation. I said Caswell Franklin was carrying an article in the newspaper on Sunday.
You're going off on a different issue, man.
No. What I'm saying pertains to workers that was educating the workers about their rights.
All right. Well, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention, and we congratulate you. I certainly hope that when next I see you, I can celebrate with you. As a consequence of the mob a ton of money that you're likely to get. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. welcome to the program. It's now 16 minutes after 1 o'clock.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
I don't want to be very long, but I would like somebody to put to rest this whole thing about removing Nelson statue from Broad Street or Hewer Square, wherever it is. I think if we really want to diversify our tourism product, we should try to preserve as many of our historical sites as possible, in spite of the fact that we want to get rid of that dreaded tradition of slavery and colonialism and that kind of thing. And I do not understand why we cannot make the connection between heritage and the diversification of tourism. I don't want to get into the pros and cons of demolishing the NIS building or the fire service or whatever. But generally speaking, I think that whenever construction is being, or development is being incurred, I think we need to see how we can incorporate any structure that can be used to enhance our tourism product. You know, I sit down here and I hear and see discussions about people overseas preserving their monuments. You know, they have them all cleaned up. They even have period plays to see, to tell people how things were in the 1850s and whatnot. And we in Barbados, we want the tourism dollar, but we still want to get rid of a pass that would help us to enhance our coffers. And I mean, presumptuous and tell all of those activists who want to remove Nelson to stop it. What I think they should try to do is to see how they can stop the unwanted development of open window spaces to the sea, where we seem to be very anxious to build up a concrete jungle. And then in another set of our mouths, we want to tell the visitors about what we have to offer. And Barbados has a lot to offer in terms of its natural beauty and its natural buildings. So I just want the activists to just forget that and see how they can incorporate the Barbadian genuine culture into the tourism product and try to even stop the unheeded development of these open spaces whereby we can't see the sea. That is essentially what I want to say.
Well, I think I understand and to some extent I support the idea that we have to be walking on both tracks at the same time. That we have to elevate aspects of our history that have been buried, and we've been through a long period where that was the case, while at the same time acknowledging those monuments and those elements of our heritage that, even though we may consider them to be somewhat repugnant because of these colonial past and that sort of thing, they still have a role to play in providing us with something to show off to the international community. Heritage is important, I agree with you. There are countries that are able to earn quite a lot out of that experience. And I think, I mean, I look forward to the day on the other side of the coin where we can earn more out of the Rihanna experience, and that we have more like memorabilia and that sort of thing. In the same way that Jamaica reveres Bob Marley, and they have been able to transform that into something that is greater than just a place to go and just celebrate the work of Bob Marley, that you can actually turn it into some kind of a business venture. But I certainly am not among those who believe that we need to get rid of Nelson. I feel that Nelson has been a part of our past, whether we like it or not, and that we have brought some balance to that by having a statue of the Right Excellent Errol Walton Barrow down in Independence Square.
The irony of the whole Jamaican thing is that the Jamaicans, if I may be forwarding to say, listening to watch a lot of YouTube and whatever it is, And they even themselves don't even think that they exploit their cultural, their heritage to the max in terms of allowing people to see that side of them. And they seem to be steeped in culture. You know, so and if we're competing for that dollar, what is it that we want to have our cake and eat it too in terms of who we want to be part of our history and who we want to be part of our present? You know, so I don't really know. We're in a spot of bother, I think, is in relation to where we are going and who we are as a people. Before I go, there is another situation with the planting of the trees and whatnot. I am not against planting the trees, but as happened along the beach somewhere in Bridgetown, I can't remember where it was, where this entity presumptuously want to plant everything on the beach, you know, and block the lifeguards and whatnot. I would hope that with all of these trees being planted, that in 10 years' time, we will not have to dig them up because they're blocking some corner of the road or somebody's whatever property. Because I can remember years ago, they planted a number of grape trees on the beach along Spring Garden. I think that is Brown's Beach, not Brown's Beach, that is the beach along Spring Garden. And in a month's time, all of them were I don't know, disappeared. So they planted it with well and good intention, and then they realized that maybe they planted too many that were hiding some other entity or whatever. So it's okay to plant the trees, but I think that we need to make sure that we don't plant them and then next 3 years we got to dig them because they're blocking somebody's vision. All right, that's my position today. Thank you, man.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
How are you today, sir?
I'm well, and you?
Well, I'm fine. Kind of, you draw me in today, and the last caller have actually brought me a little bit closer to what I want to discuss with you. And I don't know if I heard you right. If I heard you right, then I have to accept. If I heard you wrong, then you could correct me. We're dealing with the people from Tonga Country Planning. I also hope the people from the Barbados are, as we would say, the people who are responsible for heritage are listening, because there is a whole situation on Bay Street, Mr. Ellis, that I'm wondering if we are still involved in heritage tourism. First, I want to express the fact that you spoke about the area between Jemmett's Lane, you spoke about the old eye hospital, and as far as I know, the property in between there was the Zephyrin Zone, which was the Savoy. But before that, Ms. Ellis, one of the important aspects of what we're talking about, tourism and heritage tourism, is that the stretch of Bay Street, the footprint of the stretch of Bay Street, just a couple of yards away from where you were talking about this morning, there was an alley which was known as Lewis Alley. Lewis Alley does not exist any longer, because Copacabana seemed to have taken over that walkway that was Lewis Alley, which was between the Masonic Lodge and the Printery. Further down, you're going to soon have another one that will be closed, that which is Tor Hills Alley, which is the alley between Dowden and also the building that is now being acquired. Further down, you've got Parfit Alley, Farner's Alley, you've got Mourns Alley. And, Mr. Ellis, these are non-existence. I am wondering, if we are talking about heritage tourism, if we are talking about, similar to what the gentleman have just said, the whole thing about it is that we cannot just walk over these. I know at the present moment there is a disc. I asked some person from the trust company, if they knew of Torner's Alley, if they knew of Lewis Alley. The person said to me they've never heard about it. Now, if you look on the old maps of Barbados, you will see that that was one of the leading alleys in Barbados. So we have a situation that in between the old eye hospital, we have a situation between the estate there now that is owned by Copacabana, which was formerly Savoy. Savoy has been embodied into the estate. Below that, we have got Kamau Buffett's roundhouse, the family, which I think you're familiar with. What I'm trying to say at this point is that we are confusing our history in relation to the development of Bridgetown. And I'm saying this in the sense that we are diminishing most of our heritage for a continuation. When the gentleman said just now, I agree with him, there's no need to destroy and build back. There's a need to be able to teach and to move forward in what we had and what we can continue to have. Lewis Alley, very few people are aware that Lewis Alley have been torn down, and I've mentioned that for the censor withdrawal close to some person in the alley when you came straight out of the Beijing pub and you crossed the road between the Masonic and also the what we consider the printer. It was Lewis Alley. There's no more Lewis Alley there. And if you go down Bay Street where they're building, where they're supposed to build, you realize that a percentage of landmarks of Barbados of the past have been completely erased. Now, I'm saying what you said as far as Savoy is concerned. And the question I'm asking, the Savoy was a private property, but government took it over at one time to use the child care in it, but it was the property of the Zephyrins. The point that I understand that it has been sold by Barbados Tourism Inc. means that somewhere along the line is a questionable situation. I know for sure that about 3 years ago that the old eye hospital was sold because it was published, it was sold to a Barbadian consortium to develop that hotel. Nothing has been done about it other than close it up to stop the vagrants from occupying it. I know there was also a move to enhance the Wrong Rock, which is Colonel Buffett's family Wrong Rock house there. But we are missing an important aspect, and I like when I heard you this morning outlining that we are missing an important aspect of, are we into heritage tourism? Are we just figuring within ourselves that we could call it heritage tourism, but the footprints of Barbados, historical footprints of Barbados, seem to be erased? Can I hear you?
Well, I have had a conversation, which I am splitting up into about two other programs for Sagicor's Early Business, and I will run that tomorrow and Wednesday. And that conversation has been with the guy who has invested in the Copacabana, the Copacabana one. I think there's some interesting insights into what can be done with Bay Street and Nelson Street. It is not just a question of what has been lost already, but how are you going to take care of that which has been there over the years and the degree to which you will continue to capture the architecture of that particular part of Bridgetown. Now, what we carried this morning had him talking about what Copacabana was. It was a nightclub, and it was well known as a brothel. He said that when they decided that they were going to embark upon the current project, many people said, you can't use that name. That name has been associated with worthlessness in Barbados. And therefore, he went against the advice on that, and he feels that he's been able to turn it into something significant. However, I want to say to you that there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. And I'll share with you some comments which I did not actually carry in the report this morning. But I think Mr. Alan Kinch, who is the director of the Savoy, would have no objection to my sharing this information. No, since he wanted me to carry it within the context of the report which we did this morning, but I didn't have enough time for it. And I felt that the points which were put into the program brought the required balance to it. And therefore, he says, one question comes to mind. How did the Town and Country Planning Department give permission to a restaurant and bar that has a capacity of over 800 persons permission without a single parking spot? The TCPO, Town and Country Planning Office, the rules are greatly flawed, he says. Hyatt Ziva has no parking in their plan, as the Town and Country Planning Office do not require any for businesses in Bridgetown. The standard for condo developments is one per unit with none extra for visitors. Why would the government not incorporate over 1,000 spots into the old NIS and Probim fire station sites instead of the garden planned. He then goes on to say that when Massey sell the pierhead site, there will be no parking on the south side of the Carenage. I also wish to make it clear that a planning application was sent in the same time the other tourism sites, including Drill Hall, the old hospital across the road, Pebbles Beach, the pierhead beside the old helicopter pad in town, and Travers Way sites were sent in, but is still awaiting a Section 18 hearing and decision, while the others have received outline permission. He went on to say that my intention is to open bars and restaurants and reinstate the jetty as soon as possible, and we will welcome the taxis again. The application includes more than double the current parking, with some underground. The temporary fence is only up until insurance can be put in place and the condition of the area improved. So that tells you, from that particular information, that whatever is planned there is going to have implications for what you see as the window to the sea. And, you know, all of this is now going to become a subject for much debate, much controversy. I mean, certainly hope that we can help guide the discussion that will ensue from all of it. Ultimately hoping that you will create an environment where you get the best for Barbados.
Mr. Ellis, I am on record of asking for three ministries to understand that the developers are finding a loophole. And the three ministries I'm asking for is the Ministry of Housing and Lands. I'm also asking that the Town Country Planning understand clearly. And somewhere along the line, the National Conservation Commission, because here it is that you and I just spoke about it. There are a lot of loopholes that have taken place on that stretch and has been taken advantage by the developer. You cannot blame the developer if the developer realizes, well, look, this is not as part of what it should be. This is only belief. So
But Mark, you would concede that we haven't really had before us what we see as a holistic plan for the development of that part of the country.
Well, I know for sure, and just to tease you, on the right side of the road coming from Bay Street, there is a landmark which is known as which was the London Bone Towers, which is the towers there. But about another 100 yards up, Mr. Ellis, there's a building at the corner of Beckwith Street that they will not trouble. Because that building is the landmark of the formation in 1938 of the Barbados Labour Party. And it stands out, it's a marginal building, it stands out clear there as one of the landmarks.
But it is well maintained. It is very well maintained. Indeed, I want to say to you that one of the things that I want to see done is that I want to see London Bourne Towers kept in a proper condition. I mean, properly painted and that sort of thing. I mean, we can find ourselves in a situation where in the not-too-distant future, if the current trend continues, where that could start to look in a dilapidated state. And I mean, I think we all were proud of it when it was established, and it needs to be maintained in a certain condition. I don't know how the government is going to affect that, especially the National Housing Corporation, because ideally it would mean that the NHC would have to pass on some of that responsibility to the people who live in those units, but they, on the other side of the coin, will be looking to the NHC to do it. The NHC doesn't have the wherewithal, from what I gather.
For sure, I know that the National Trust is responsible for the building at Beckwith Street, but it's a private-owned family setup. Between there, Mr. Ellis, I like this conversation is very important. Between what can be considered as the Selby's property all the way up to what we call the Savoy, there's a whole situation. This is why I'm asking that you and I are confused. history seems to be bogged down and buried in the certain areas that we cannot question. And if these ministries are responsible, then the ministries have the answers. And no, you've got a whole set of area paid up there in 8 Bay Street. It's a property, it's owned. And if the people want to develop the property, they're developing the property on the conditions of what they've seen in the regulations. Now, when it comes to the 75-meter stretch between the high tide and the land, and you spoke about the jetty, there's no way that anybody can construct a jetty, in my reading, without the permission of the coastal services. There's no anybody could commit a jetty, whether it be high art, whomever it may be. And I want to leave this with you, because I know you are one of those people that will find out. If there isn't a serious court matter going on between some of those buildings there between Gemmett's Lane and down to the other part outside of Moran's Alley in relation to not honoring the established rules in terms of building. So surely...
Well, I think that, I mean, you may very well find that quite a lot of the issues relating to properties in Barbados are before the courts. If you really want to speed up the process of beautifying Barbados, it must begin in many instances by speeding up the process in the law courts so that a lot of these issues are resolved. But, you know, one observation coming here to us is that the provision of a large quantum of parking is counterproductive and obsolete thinking, that cities are for walking and cycling. Now, that's one perspective on it. The other one, though, as that person makes that point, is if you create more parking on the periphery of Bridgetown, can you not use that as a means of reducing the amount of traffic going through Bridgetown itself? What do you think?
You know, Mr. Ellis, when you consider the plan for Hyatt, it is known for a fact that Hyatt tells you that when they open, they will at least have 480 rooms, X this, X that, and a staff consignment of 1,500 people. But somewhere along the line, they're providing a car park on the other side, the old ambulance business on the ground, for 100 vehicles. 400 vehicles. Now you have a staff of 1,500 people. You have X amount of condominiums and X amount of hotel rooms. But still along the line, your plan does not show that you have made provision for parking. You have not made provision for parking for your staff, far less. So in talking to you, I think this is a matter we need to
keep. So the question is, where will these people park?
They probably have to park above Demet's Lane.
Or will they park and ride?
Well, I don't know if this is the plan, but somewhere along the line, that is part, and I could email it to you, the plan for hire in terms of staff parking and the location. I know for a fact that the further end, down Pirates Cove, that land, BTI, that is land owned by BTI, where parking is being extended there. So it's either that we are going to make provision for parking in the city, or we're going to allow development and constructions to go on without the parking facilities being made possible.
Well, how are you going to deal with the wider issue of parking, where, as has been alleged to me, you have people who are trying to extract a whole set of money out of parking facilities from other businesses that operate near them, and in the view of some, the fees are extravagant. They are going too high, and they're making it very difficult to proceed with certain types of development that the administration is looking at. Yet that is one of the tensions that is emerging.
Well, it needs to be discussed, but I know for sure that there were plans for double-story high-rise parking just outside of Queen's College Gate, where Old Fort Royal was.
I'm talking about the south. You know, I'm talking about not just Bridgetown, but the south coast of Barbados.
South coast as well.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the situation confronting the people who work with sandals and the parking facilities available for them, they have been inadequate to deal with the large number of people that they employ.
Well, they push you to park and ride. They push you to park and ride, leave your vehicle at home.
Yes.
And park and ride. But I think this subject with Sergeant Core and this a very good subject, I think that there's a need, and I'm closing on saying this, that you people like yourself and people like me and people who are concerned want to hear the government departments, the ministry, the cabinet responsible for this little loophole that is causing this situation in developers and development within that area. I think we need to know if they're going to check it. We need to know if there isn't a loophole, or but I know, and you know, there's a loophole. The developers are showing us there's a loophole. You have a good evening, sir.
Thank you very much. Let's take another call. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. I'm calling today. This is my first time calling Brastack.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say good afternoon to everybody. Good afternoon to you. Good afternoon to all the listeners. As you can see, I'm so nervous because I...
All right, well, let me just try to get rid of that nervousness. Because by asking you, first of all, I mean, if you have not called Brass Tacks before, what would prompt you to call us today?
Well, I am 30 years old, right?
Yeah.
I was recently retrenched from the BERT program. Why I'm calling today is because there was a situation where me and my partner, who was living together, was working. I don't know. Okay. All right. So I was working with my partner. We were both retrenched, and it was kind of like a battle because both me and my partner were not to be retrenched together, right?
Because the government said that wasn't to happen, that two people from the same household should not have gone home.
Right.
So what happened then?
I was pregnant as well. So I can just give you the whole rundown.
Okay.
Right, so I was pregnant, and we had a meeting with the unions concerning who will be retrenched and stuff like that, right? So the union had agreed with the commission that either my partner or me would get sent home. And I had opted to go home because I was pregnant. I was really stressed about hearing about the severance. You can imagine in that situation how you would feel.
Yeah.
So after that, I fell at work also. That's very important. I fell at work on the day that the meeting was taking place, actually going to the meeting. So it was all for, say, 9 months. My partner had gotten retrenched, although the union was battling for him to stay because he's the one with the degree and stuff like that. And he was there first because it was a first in, last in, first out situation as well. So he was there before me. So honestly, he was the person who was supposed to stay. Anyhow, he got retrenched and I stayed. And we both were severed when I went back to work from sick leave. We both were severed after I had my baby. We both were severed then. So we are now home. Our severance is dwindling. Well, my severance is dwindling because his severance was gone ever since. So it's like, I'm wondering, and I know that the Prime Minister have a good agenda. I know that she wants to do good for Barbados. I know that she wants to do good to help us to get to a better place. I have two sons. One goes to Commonwealth and one is now going to be a year this month, right? So I was wondering if there's any hope for this situation because both me and my partner are home. We have no salary. It's really heartening. And when I listen to Brass Tacks every day, right, I get the hope that somebody would listen, somebody would hear on the many stories that are told. I'm a key listener, and I find this. I'm very nervous.
Okay.
I find this, our VOB of itself, to be very educational. I find it to get across Barbados. I know you have very much listeners. Nervousness.
All right, let me ask you this question.
Yes, please.
I want you to share with us what life has been like in this period. You would have been retrenched when specifically?
Last year, September.
September.
Yes, please.
And as you said, your partner was retrenched before you.
Yes, please.
All right. So what has life been like in this period for the two of you? What's the day-to-day experience?
Well, right now we find ourselves very busy because we really couldn't sit and do nothing. We started a small business selling patties and drinks and stuff like that just to get the mortgage paid, basically. That's what our life, day-to-day life, taking care of our young son, who is now going to be a year this week. And just getting along with the small business, which, as I say, is pays the mortgage.
So where's your partner today?
He is across by his grandmother because she's not well, so he's going to take care of her today along with my son.
And he does that on a regular basis with her?
With his grandmother?
Yes.
Yeah, because she doesn't live far from us, so she's there alone. We actually even thinking about going across there to live because she's very old and she needs the care, and it doesn't make sense we in one house and she in another. So we had planned to move across there and so that we could rent out the house and get some additional income.
What has all of this done to your relationship?
Well, to be honest, it made me, I can honestly, one point I can honestly say, it made me harder on my son going to school because I tried to urge him to go to school and do not take schooling, like, for a joke. Take it very seriously, go to school with a motive and an intention and set goals both short-term and long-term because education is key. Education is really key and he needs to take education seriously. So that's one thing that weighs on my mind heavily, along with like where I can get the next dollar from and stuff like that. But the key point for me is to not take education lightly because my partner, he went and got his degree. I'm not qualified how I would like to be, honestly. So that's something I will work on too in this time.
You know, hard times break up people.
Yeah, they do.
And what kind of stress and strain does that put on the relationship?
Well, to be honest, because we were both sent on from the same organization, I can honestly say we have a stronger bond because, like, if we don't stick together, it's like we will fall harder because he will be on his own, I will be on my own. So it made us stronger. That's the truth.
Great. And how many other people you know in this kind of situation?
Well, when we went home, it was about 30. And like I said, I know about 30-something people along with the people in other commissions, but 30-something people who are close to me who went home along the time frame that I went home who haven't even got back work as yet. But they're trying, you know, because I can speak for myself. Myself, I can see the bigger picture. And that's why, as I say, I urge my son to go to school because I can see that the future might be a little brighter for them when he grows up. He's now 13. When he grows up to be a man, I wish that the sacrifice that I made today by being retrenched, that I honestly wish that benefits him.
Now, you have to tell me, basically, what makes you so optimistic about the future in all these circumstances?
Because I really can't afford to be a pessimist in a situation like this. It would make me stressed and sad, and I don't want that. I can't have my newborn son seeing me sad all the time, or, you know, that's not the way I want for my children, to be honest. I want them to see a bright future. I want them, my sanity and my happiness affects them.
Okay, let me say to you that I am going to do as much as we can to get information from you. Somebody is here on the telephone line, and yes, I'm going to put them on the air right now to speak to you directly. The person who just called my telephone, can you, I don't know to what extent you want to identify yourself, but more importantly, I want you to tell this young lady what can be done in these circumstances. And from what vantage point are you speaking?
Okay.
I'm speaking. I'm a member of I work for the Barbados, the Household Mitigation Unit. This unit was implemented by the Prime Minister to assist the retrenched workers. Some of them never reached out to us, and we didn't have their contact numbers. I'm asking her to reach out to me, she and her partner, and I can assist them, maybe in getting a job, and in many other ways. Please ask them to call me. My number is 832-0092. My name is Marquita Butcher.
Okay, the number again.
Yes, please.
832-0092. We are trying to reach all of the retrenched workers. And okay. We are here to assist them in whatever way possible. She said her partner is qualified. And I may be able to assist me finding some employment. So that's why this unit was set up to assist the retrenched workers.
It was set up
in December last year. And a lot of them, we do not have their contact numbers, and they never reached out to us. although we have several ads on GIS that maybe if they were listening, they would be able to reach out.
Okay. Well, sometimes they're so busy trying to get on with life, they can't listen to the radio too much. But
yes, I am aware of that. But I'm here to reach back. That's my job.
Okay, well, that's positive news. You're hearing about this unit for the first time, ma'am?
Yes, please. To be honest, yes, I haven't heard about it before. And not only that, because it was an ongoing case with the Barbados Workers Union, I was basically waiting to hear back from them because it was in their hands. I didn't hear about the program, to be honest, and I didn't want to like go further with it. But you can imagine sitting on listening to Brass Stats every day, hearing listeners call with everything that weighs heavy on their heart. I felt that I could be one to share with Barbados what I am going through, because I honestly see the listeners are like a family, and I hope I could be welcome into the family of Brass Stats and VOB as well.
Well, you are definitely part of the family, and I would suggest that in light of what you have said to us, that perhaps the government needs to put more of that information within a program like Brass Stats, so that people like you can be made more aware of what is available. Yours has been a moving story. I don't know how come I get all these moving stories when I come and sit down here. I mean, sometimes it's really tough.
I chose you specifically because as I listen on a day-to-day basis, I find that, I don't know, I'm more attached to you. Because I find you to be the fairest, to be honest. But that's not to bash
anybody else. You'll
be right. But I genuinely connect with you, honestly.
Well, I thank you very much. But I'm going to put a lot of pressure on my heart sometimes. All right. Look, we have, in a sense, provided you with a platform for advancement. I mean, in the midst of all of these challenges that you are facing, you know what comes through here? It is that sense of family that you have with your partner. It is that the difficulty is driving you closer together, has strengthened your bond. And in those circumstances, you are not fighting this battle alone. I want to compliment both of you for the efforts that you've made, and I sincerely hope that calling this household mitigation unit at 432-0092 will make a material difference to your lives. And when it happens, don't forget to tell us. Down to Brass Stacks. Thank you. I want the lady who just called us to call us back and leave your contact details with the producer of this show. You can call her through the switchboard at 430-7300. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Stacks.
Good afternoon, Miss Ellis.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm well.
Listen, I just listened to that very heart-wrenching conversation you had with that lady. Miss Ellis, do you know that there are lots and lots of cases in this country just like that?
Well, there are a lot of them who don't know where to turn as well.
But they can't get you to your program. I deal with them almost on a daily basis.
But they don't know where to turn to. So in those circumstances, just like her, there's a unit that was set up for that purpose.
Yeah, and
so this information suggests
that unit.
I hear you. I hear you. You send a lot of people to them?
Mr. Ellis, up to yesterday, I was teaching Sunday school. And I asked a youngster in my class, he doesn't go to school every day. And I asked him about this, because I get concerned. You know what he told me? That he gets for lunch on a daily basis? He eats a pack of tea time biscuits and a drink. All right? And that holds him until he gets back home. I said, listen, there are people who have been in school meetings and other departments who got laid off, single parents who got laid off, couples who got laid off and have not been working and cannot get work. I mean,
that's our recognized. Just give me a break, please. That's our recognized reality, okay? So you say to me, you are within the church.
Yep.
Now let's accept that the government has its responsibility, but the rest of society also does. So tell me, how has your church responded to this challenge?
As we try, I personally provide on an almost week, no, not almost, on a weekly basis for people who need help. The church also does that. But there are many, many cases where people were promised that they will not be laid off if they were the only breadwinner in the house.
But sir, you are prepared. I hear you. And I understand that. But here am I looking for another angle to this, and it is this. In the face of this kind of difficulty, how would the church and other institutions have to reform the way they are doing business to help create an avenue for people like this?
Well, the churches can set up, and the churches have set up, I personally have set up what they call a benevolent fund to help people pay their water bill, their light bill. Some people, you know, you do it on a regular, on a monthly basis so that people won't...
Like, now, how has that fund changed? What kind of response have you had to the fund? From people who make a contribution?
No, you don't go and reach out to the public to bring my funds in the church. The church offering will assist. My personal savings will help me in that respect. But
this is not just about you. This is about the whole church.
I understand. No. The church helps.
Mm-hmm.
The church helps. But I'm saying to you, yes, it is partly the responsibility of the church to look after its congregation and the needs of those persons.
Yeah.
But Mr. Ellis, there's also departments of government where persons that you pay taxes to thing. And when people go to those departments...
Same people who were paid by the taxpayers to provide service, the same people who went to primary school, secondary school, and university out of the taxpayers' money, treat those people badly. You know that. Agree?
There's no consequence management practice. There's nobody that you can call and say, look, so and so the thing. Nobody cares. Apparently, you cannot send anybody to the welfare department and they come back feeling satisfied they're going to get help tomorrow.
Okay. I hope that you can come back and discuss this with me in greater detail because, I mean, the scenarios are many, similar to what this lady explained to us. And, I mean, we got to do the best that we can to get the rest of Barbados to be responsive to the plight of people like this. While I accept that the government departments have their role to play, the question that we must ask is, how is the rest of Barbados adjusting to this reality? Thank you all for participating in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks, and special thanks to my producer, Michelle Brathwaite. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.